With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Here on RCR, we have spoken a couple of times to Deb Cunliffe. Deb is the president of the Nurses Professional Association of New Zealand, NPANS, and operational director of NZ Unions. And on RCR before, we have chatted about nursing matters, the COVID experience for nurses, and she's coming back onto the program. Deb, are you there?
I am. Hello. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Deb. And beaming in from Wellington, Jack Maguire from the Red Union. Jack Maguire is the managing director of Red Union Support Hub, a service entity that helps frontline workers establish more politically independent and cost-effective unions. Hi, Jack. Nice to have you on.
Morning, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Okay, so the reason we're having Deb and Jack on will come into focus very quickly. First up, though, can I get from each of you an explanation as to why unions are necessary, just to set the groundwork so we understand where we're coming from before we talk about these new initiatives that we've been hearing about. So, Deb, do you want to go first?
Yeah. So from my perspective, Paul, unions are an important part of the workplace in throughout the world because they represent the rights of workers. That's in a nutshell. And often a worker by themselves get disenfranchised and siloed. But when you've got the might of a union or a representative entity behind them, then they're more likely to have better rights, workplace terms and conditions and representation. So they are vitally important. For me, and I'm sure you'll come to this, for me, I've been a union member for over 40 years as a nurse, so a union and a professional association member. And I've paid union dues for over 40 years. And really, it's the last 3 years where I feel dreadfully let down by the unions, the legacy unions, and hence where we are today.
Jack?
Well, I would say, I mean, if you want a recent example, I mean, if you look at what happened over that COVID period, we saw the greatest period of industrial carnage possibly ever seen. And if someone wanted to try and take on that mammoth legal fight by themselves, you'd be looking at tens of thousands of dollars and, you know, trying to crowdfund it. And to most people, that's just out of reach. It's not accessible. So I think pooling and collecting resources together, you know, for people who have common interests to take on a fight, that's very standard for what a union does or should do, I must say. I think a lot of unions have been derelict in their duties, but being able to pool resources and of course, you know, as a professional association, being able to provide professional indemnity insurance and all those other trimmings that come with it, career protection and better wages, all that sort of thing.
Deb, I'm reading from a Stuff article dated the 14th of July, 2023. Just a couple of lines from here, and then we'll talk about it. An Australian network of anti-mandate unions boasting more than 17,000 members, has expanded to Aotearoa, that's New Zealand, establishing its own nurses union. And you are mentioned in there, Nurses for Freedom founder Deborah Cunliffe. And obviously they sort of hit job you there with the anti-vax and all that sort of stuff. And I've got a quote here from the Australian Council of Trade Union Secretary Sally McManus from the Sydney Morning Herald, October 2021, describing Red Union as fake unions. Now, we'll talk about that in just a moment, Deb, but Jack, fake unions, they've got some competition. Is that why someone like Sally McManus would say that?
Oh, that's all they've got is to try and lower the tone of the conversation and revert to sort of name-calling. I mean, if you want to know my opinions on what a fake union is, I think a fake union is a union that takes membership dues, sometimes up to $1,000 a year for, you know, in Deb's case, maybe 40 years, most cases 30 years. And then the one time that they need assistance, they turn around and say, no, we're not helping you. In my mind, that's what a fake union is. They're obviously pretty threatened by us. Correction to the article, it's not 17,000 members. It's actually closer to 19,000 members. But they're obviously worried about leaking members across both in Australia and New Zealand to us because we're offering a new choice, a, you know, fresh take on unions, that actually is happy to back the individual regardless of what their opinion or issue may be.
So, Deb, what is now the relationship with Red Union? How have they helped you and other groups, and mention them, in setting up really an alternative union ecosystem, really, potentially, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So Red Union first came onto the scene early late in 2022, when we, as an organisation, Nurses for Freedom, we knew that we couldn't sustain going forward as we were, just as a essentially an informal group, and we needed to formalise our activities and to bring some real meaning to those nurses that were feeling cast adrift by the system and issues that weren't being addressed. But by some contact, we touched base with the Red Union team and with Jack and the team. And I honestly think, Paul, and this isn't being dramatic, but they've actually been lifesavers for hundreds of nurses already in New Zealand, who have felt that they've not been listened to, that they aren't respected by their unions. And they've just come over to us. We've had to do very little persuasion, because those nurses were ready for change. And it's not just around the COVID narrative. It's not just around the freedom journey. This is around lifetime experiences of unions that have not done what they're going to do, but waste money on campaigns and issues that really are not getting the members the benefits that they need. Queries that remain unsettled, claims that nurses are getting less than initially agreed, and lots of political idealization that doesn't actually come to fruition. So there's lots more than just our journey. This whole amalgamation with Red Unions and now NZ Unions. So we're registered in our own right in New Zealand, and we work alongside Red Union. They're our sister union. They're our big sister union. They're addressing all these issues, these New Zealand-based issues. And in some ways, they're quite a way ahead of us in Australia, not only because of the size of population, but because New Zealand was a little bit late catching up in the COVID narrative, particularly, but certainly in the whole union rhetoric. So they've been where we're going. They started, they were new once, and now 10 years in, they're nearly 20,000 members. So we can come under their wings like a mother hen almost, and we're learning, we're growing, we're adapting, we're being responsive at a member level and at a governance level. So it's working really well. And, we are really grateful to Jack and the team for taking a punt on us and for seeing and understanding the issues. And we didn't really have to go into detail. They knew them. The issues that we faced were integral to the issues they faced in Australia. So it was a given that they would come alongside and journey with us.
Jack, I think your designation as Managing Director of Red Union Support Hub. So obviously, yes. You're sort of like the cog in the system that keeps everybody linked in. Is that what you do?
Yes, I might explain how we started just very quickly, and I guess how it all works, just to be clear. So we started roughly 10 years ago. There's a group of nurses on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland who weren't happy with their union and the advocacy they were getting from their union. They thought they were being a little too quiet during the Queensland Health payroll bungle. Now, that resulted in some nurses being paid twice, not paid at all for some months, given double the amount of annual leave, directed to go take leave when they got back, told them they now owed them money, and they thought that their union was pulling their punches because it was a Labor government in charge at the time, and the Queensland Nurses Union was directly affiliated with the Labor Party, so they wanted something that was less partisan and just cheaper. So they came across a fellow, Graham Haycroft, who's been in industrial relations for many years, and he underwrote the enormous expense of starting a union. As you could expect, you need to put on industrial offices, sometimes lawyers, you need to build a website, you've got advertising costs. It's quite a big cost barrier. So Graham set up the Red Union Support Hub, which in effect lowers the cost barrier for workers to set up their own unions. And then we provide services too. A group of nurses who want to set up a nurse union, a group of teachers who want to set up a teachers union, et cetera. So really, given that we are able to centralise and pool all the resources in the Red Union Support Hub, a group of workers could come along, say if there was a group of police officers in New Zealand want to set up a new union, you could effectively come across with, 10, 20, 30 police officers, and we'd be able to provide a pretty effective, coverage, industrial coverage, legal protection, et cetera, right from the get-go.
No wonder the Australian Council of Trade Union Secretary said that, because that's serious competition right there, isn't it?
Because we have baked into all of the constitutions of these unions, the prohibition on giving any money directly or indirectly to the Labor Party or any political party for that matter, we're able to offer fees that sometimes half the price, but always about 30% cheaper.
So where did and both of you can respond to this, obviously, where did unions go off the rails then? Because this this alliance, political alliance thing, seems to be an incredibly compromising problem, right? It's a conflict of interest, big time. I guess that really comes to the fore when we have something like the last few years, when you get unions all in for the political party and not for the workers.
Mm. Well, do you mind if I jump in first, Deb?
Yeah, go for it.
Of course, the Labor Party was formed by the union movement. And so the union movement should be very proud of their, very close affiliation with the Labor Party. And over the years, they've had some wins. But I think the problem is the Labor Party themselves have moved away from the union movement and, yep, and have sort of gone off chasing green votes and all sorts of other things, pursuing work agendas. And even the union movements themselves, there was the big split in Australia between the ALP and the DLP, the Democratic Labor Party. So there used to be a home for conservatives or centre-right, working-class people in the union movement. But I think they're finding, more and more apparent that they just don't have a home there anymore. So I suppose just for the average, somewhat conservative family that just want to look after their, their kids and the family household, the old union movement doesn't really appeal to them anymore. And I think we're trying to set ourselves up to be the new home for those people.
And it's a way of funneling funds though, isn't it?
Well, yes, either through the New Zealand Council of Trade Unions, we've heard some unions have set up the Office of the CEO or Office of the Secretary or something, this whole new sort of bureaucracy within the trade unions themselves, which we suspect are where a lot of ministerial advisors in the Labor government have sort of been parked, and obviously they're there to cause trouble for the new government. But, how does that help?
So that's payback. That's kind of payback, is it, for the...
Well, they're all the same tribe, right? It's all the same group of people. Whether they wear a different hat on Monday or not, it's kind of irrelevant, really.
Yeah. And for me, sorry, Deborah, go. Yep.
I was going to say for me, Paul, to answer that question, the union movement started to go wrong worldwide when it became influenced by, that use the word, warp agendas, chasing radical philosophies rather than facing reality and putting members' rights and responsibilities first. So it's a global view and a world view that they've decided to go along with the narrative rather than dealing with the real issues. So, currently teachers not being allowed to teach, and some of the issues that we know our teachers are facing around the transgender in schools and a lot of other issues. And the unions tend to side with the prevailing narrative, which is, let children be cats or whatever they want to be, or identify as whatever they want to be. And that's where I believe the union should have stood firm. It should have represented the members, because the majority of members will not believe that walk agenda. And given a choice, I'm pretty certain that they would stick with the middle line, that conservative values that Kiwis know and trust. And it's the same with nurses, in nursing at the moment, it's a number of radical opinions flying around that suddenly become true, suddenly become representative of nurses. And it's absolutely not the case. So we offer our nurses from the grassroots upwards the ability to let their opinion be heard. And we will represent those opinions rather than going along with what we're meant to say or what the PC thing is to say.
How do we explain then? Well, I'm sure we can explain, but it's fascinating to try and explain why in the recent period unions were completely okay with doing the absolute opposite of their primary purpose. I mean, you couldn't get further away from the mission. How does that happen? Do you, I kind of know how it happens, but that's really losing the plot, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, early on, I mean, obviously with focusing on COVID, because it's, you know, kind of the tip of the iceberg where we came together, but it is a good example. You know, during the COVID crisis, as part of my role with Nurses for Freedom, I did speak to all the unions, or attempted to at the very least. And I know that some of the directors and presidents of those unions didn't actually agree with the mandate, but they weren't strong enough or didn't feel that they have the authority or even wanted to raise their head above the radar. So they didn't speak out. So they went along with what was happening. And if you, even if you speak to the unions today and the Nursing Council and all the other regulatory bodies, which we have regular contact with, they will say it was an act of government and it wasn't our decision to have the emergency.
That's what they all say.
And that's the excuse. But you're quite right, Paul, when your introduction to this part, when you said they didn't do what they were meant to do. Their basic responsibility is to protect and present membership. They didn't do that. They'll say they did, but you know, we know that there were 621 nurses.
Well, did anyone object to anyone losing a job because of the mandate? Did any union like say, well, we're not tolerating, this can't happen, we're not tolerating it, we're all going out? I don't remember that.
Yeah, if they did, it was done on an individual level. That's only where the nurses at the time, and I remember there was total chaos around what was happening. We were told it was this dangerous and all-consuming virus coming our way and we had to be vaccinated and all the messages that we had from the government, the Ministry of Health and the government. And we were so frightened about what was going to happen and we were told we couldn't speak out. So in some ways, we were subservient to the information and the direction we were given from the Hepatawara or the old DHB. So we took the mandate letter, we accepted it, we left. We may have created a fuss at the time. Some nurses who were a little bit more awake at the time did take out personal grievances. And I do believe some of the unions or one union was involved in that. But en masse, the union did not generally go to their members that were being mandated and say, take out a PG or a personal grievance. It was only if the nurse initiated that conversation. So there was no general support. There was no advice. In fact, the advice was get vaccinated or take the consequences. That was the general advice from all the unions and all the professional associations.
Yeah, well, I mean,
so they didn't do what they were meant to do.
To give you an example, I think the PPTA or one of the teachers unions in New Zealand specifically told their members not to lodge personal grievances. And then those teachers who were savvy enough to go and lodge personal grievances have now had favourable outcomes in the courts. So there was obviously something there and a legal question that needed to be answered.
Well, that's a collusion, isn't it, or a running defence?
Well, there's possibly two rationales. One is the union movement seems to put the collective ahead of absolutely everything to, you know, and to hell with the individual, whereas, you know, we have the radical approach that if an individual pays us membership dues, we owe them a service. So a lot more individual focused. But to give you an insight of what happened in Australia, Sally McManus came out as the ACTU and said that workers losing their jobs over a mandate would be a step too far. The next day, there started to be polling sent out amongst, nurses and teachers and workers, et cetera, about their voting intentions and also whether they want to get the vaccine or not get the vaccine. And then it came out that most of those people who were being hesitant or resistant weren't left-wing voters. About turn, the ACTU then jumped on the train of sacking all these people and getting them out of the workforce.
Oh, so they just sort of read the tea leaves or the direction of the wind and went with it is what they did there.
Yeah, great way of purging government departments of conservative voters.
I would imagine that if it was any other issue, not COVID or something like it, like if it was, you know, a demand that you weren't allowed to drive a certain car or something, The representation would have been full on, right? I mean, it would have been.
Yeah, you would hope. I mean, otherwise, what on earth are these unions doing? Why are they charging their fees? I mean, it's a real shame that we met Deb a little bit too late in the piece, because I think by the time we'd started up, it was about 18 months past when I think there's a 12-month limitation. We could have helped a lot of these, say, teachers to sue their former union for being negligent or, you know, being derelict in their duties, because, you know, it is pretty outrageous that someone could pay $30,000 over, you know, 30 years as a sort of an, it's a pseudo insurance product, really. You pay for in case something goes wrong. And then when something goes wrong, they just say no.
It's incredible, really, isn't it? Debbie, you want to say something?
No.
I thought I heard you about to say something. Okay, so for those who are listening right now and thinking, Jack, you might be able to fill in a few or check a few boxes here. What are the advantages of going alternative then?
You get all the same services. That's, you know, legal protection, professional indemnity insurance, which is a requirement for nurses registration. And we also offer it for teachers, which other teacher unions don't provide professional indemnity insurance. We're way more contactable. If you call us up, we'll respond within 24 hours, if not sooner. And our opening hours are longer than the other unions. And we're hoping to be able to eventually be looking at, you know, being able to have a hotline where you can call up 12 hours a day. So we have resources pooled right across Australasia. So you're joining an organisation that has pretty serious resources to throw behind a fight if required. And you just get a far more personalised individual service with our union memberships as opposed to with the other unions, where you really can't trust whether they're going to take action or, on your behalf or not.
Doesn't sound very fake.
No, it doesn't sound very fake. You're quite right, Paul. And another issue to raise there as well is that that our unions are run by nurses' union by nurses, teachers' union by teachers, and the doctors' union by doctors.
Oh, can I ask you a question? Is that in the mainstream unions, is that what you get? Or are these professional career unionists who can flick between any sector?
Well, at the moment, the chief of the nurses NZNO is not a nurse. And even the members have questioned his suitability for the role.
So he's not a nurse. Okay.
No.
Well, so but he knew a nurse once, did he? Some of his best friends are nurses.
Possibly. But, you know, we do value that we represent, because we're in the industry, and most of the executive are all currently working as well. So we're actually, with current practicing certificates, working in the industry. We know what the issues are. We face them, or we are facing them. So we're well placed to be able to address some of the bigger issues that are facing these professions in New Zealand. And we are New Zealand based, contrary to what some of the media reports are saying. We've got New Zealand staff in both islands. And like Jack says, we are well resourced. Thanks to Red Unions, we are well resourced. And we can say, and we will do what we say we will do. So, you know, we don't make promises we can't keep.
Jack, just reading that news piece, a couple of paras I read earlier on, you can tell that even, and that's less than a year ago, the media are also hostile to anyone like you as well. There's a pattern here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're here to stay. It doesn't really matter what they think about us, but
they're all in it together. It's politicians, traditional union, it's media. They're sneering, you know, you can hear the sneering, in their voice.
We're challenging the status quo, and a lot of people get their noses out of joint when, you know, someone comes along and tries to challenge the status quo. I mean, who knows? A lot of these media outlets probably have very close.
They're going to need your help soon. A lot of the pit workers in there.
Well, that's right. I'm surprised.
It's going down.
I'm surprised that stuff is still around. I think the only reason they're still around is because Jacinda gave them so much money, wasn't it? So you can expect the hit pieces from them.
Well, you know you're over the target when that happens. So, Deb, what sort of interest now, what sort of movement has there been in membership, I guess taking market share from the traditional unions, and how do you think that will be received in the workplace? Because I guess particularly public service entities are used to dealing with, friendly unions, are they?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, we've met our goals and objectives in terms of numbers, and we knew it was going to be a slow start, not only because of the economic downturn, but because people have lost trust in institutions. So even though we come along and we're a shiny new offering, you know, they need to learn to trust us and learn to respect us and learn to understand what we do and how we do it, and we'll say we'll do what we do. So it's going to take time to grow the membership, but we are, you know, certainly into the hundreds now. So that's where we wanted to be at this stage. But we're getting new members every single day, and that is testament to words getting around. And it only takes one nurse to go into her place of work and say, have you heard about this union? I've had a really good experience with them. And that's it, you know, we're sold. So we expect there to be a huge fall away from the unions coming towards us. And we, you know, we've got some good staff who represent our service really well. And they're in the hospitals and schools every week. We're visiting hospitals and schools, doing site visits, and, you know, providing services on site for members. So expect this to get bigger and shinier and more media coverage, because, again, more of a threat. You know, I think they thought in the beginning that we'd curl up and go away. They said some horrible things about us in the paper. But when I read the media reports now, it's like water off a duck's back. It means absolutely nothing. Yeah. It's the same thing. It just regurgitates time after time. And it doesn't affect us anymore because we've seen it all before.
Funnily enough, we end up picking up a few members off some of those hit pieces. So it's actually been good. But we're growing twice as fast in New Zealand as we did in Australia when we first started out. So things are looking really good. And I think the only real, the last thing that we need to do, we're in the process of starting a bargaining or collective agreement with both NZ Health and the Education Department in New Zealand. And once that happens and we have a collective agreement in place, there's actually an obligation on the employer to provide union details to any new staff members.
Oh, so, okay. I got it. Yep.
So when our details get put in front of a new staff member alongside the NZNOs, I think we'll see a huge shift, because I think it's about 80 or 90% of nurses are in the union in New Zealand, and sort of slightly less in teaching and education. It's not the case that 90% of nurses, you know, vote for the Labor Party, or indeed are happy to spend more money inadvertently, sort of, you know, through campaigning or bloated staff sort of supporting that. They'd rather just not mix politics at all with their workplace. So I think there's a significant number of people who are waiting to come across. They just want to see what we're up to, what we're up to, and what we're about. And interestingly enough, we've started doing some research in New Zealand, and we're, I guess, philosophically different from the legacy unions, I should say, in New Zealand. They believe all answers come through centralising and taking away power from local communities, and we are very much in the opposite. Here, I think there's something like, and we're in the process of doing this study, but something like 5 administrators for every 10 nurses. In France, they have more of a decentralized model. They have 1 administrator for every 10 nurses. So we want to see the restoration of these DHBs and putting locals back in charge of those the DHBs, and then all this bloated bureaucracy, we could turn that into a potentially 15 to 20% pay increase for nurses.
Wow, yeah.
In the end, it's state money.
It's kind of about the money. So, and I take it no woke is part of the pitch, is it?
Well, we are totally anti-woke, Paul.
Anti-woke is part of the pitch.
And we need to make that popular again, you know, to stand up and be anti-woke and to be common sense, integrity, common sense and fairness. And, you know, Jack mentioned, you know, about getting money into the pockets of nurses away from the centralised systems. But above all, our main aim is to restructure healthcare to focus on patient care. Mm. And same for teachers, to restructure teaching to focus on students' learning. So it's not really about our workers, although it is, because that's who we represent. But the ultimate outcome will be a better, smarter, healthier New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I guess, yes, for every dollar that these other unions spend on, you know, save the whales or the climate crisis or whatever their sort of side issues are, is a dollar that they aren't spending on their members. So you can cut all of that out with us and we just focus on spending money on members' interests, full stop.
So if people want to know more, they can go to unions.co.nz, Deb, right?
Yeah, that's right. Or there are individual websites for the teachers, tpans.unions.co.nz or mpans.unions.co.nz or nzmps.co.nz. But the email address, sorry, the website address that you mentioned, Paul, is the main landing page, and that will take people to each one of the three unions.
Yeah, and you are president of the Nurses Professional Association of NZ and the operational director of NZ Unions, just to clarify. That's I'm correct there, correct. Aren't I?
And, that's correct.
And, Jack, if people want to find out about Red Union, redunion.com.au, is that the place to go?
Yes, that's right. They can go there and they can see, you know, what we've been up to in Australia. But, yeah, that unions.co.nz is the best local website.
Okay. I want to thank Deb Cunliffe for coming in. I've just described what she does. And Jack Maguire, Managing Director of Red Union Support Hub. Thanks for coming in and telling us about that. It's really interesting.
Appreciate it, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us, Paul. Great to talk to you again.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.